Hebrews chapter 11, verse 32 is our study this morning. I'll begin by reading this. Hebrews 11, verse 32. And what more shall I say, for the time would fail me to tell of Gideon and Barak and Samson and Jephthah, also of David and Samuel and the prophets. The year was 146 B.C. It was the eve of the last battle that would ever be fought in the Punic Wars. Now, the Punic Wars, the word Punic is a derivative of the word Phoenician. The Punic Wars were a series of three great wars fought over a period of 120 years between Rome and Carthage. Carthage was the great city on the northern coast of Africa in what would today be around Tripoli, and it had been established by Phoenicians. It was a great trading center. It was 250 miles south of Rome as the crow flies, and it was inevitable that Rome and Carthage would become great rivals. And they fought a series of three great wars, beginning about 260 B.C. And the historian Polybius is the one who saved the history of these wars. But the last one occurred at Carthage in 146. The Romans came up with a general by the name of Scipio Africanus, who was a Patton. He was a MacArthur. He was the match of all the Carthaginian generals. The most famous Carthaginian general, of course, was Hannibal, who got his elephants, went up to Spain, marched all the way around over the Alps, and invaded Italy, and for several years terrorized the Romans and the people of Italy. But now it's after that battle, long after that battle, Scipio Africanus has taken the Roman troops down to Carthage. They have completely reduced the city. There are only a handful of Carthaginian soldiers holding out in a temple in the middle of town. The next day, the Romans would overwhelm those remaining Carthaginians and they would burn the city. Polybius says that on the eve of that last battle, Scipio was up on a hillside overlooking Carthage, and he began weeping. And he wept, and he wept, because he understood that what Carthage had been reduced to, one day Rome would be reduced to. He foresaw the fate of Rome and the fate of Carthage. He understood that there is no nation, there is no empire, there is no culture that is immortal. And that's pretty much where I feel we've gotten in this country. We've made it to 250 years. We've done better than most. But what I see when I take time to look at the TV and read the headlines, what I see is a level of incivility and depravity, perversity, unbelief, paganism, such as I never thought I'd see in this country. And I'm to the point, I'm not the only one, I've heard others say this, I'm to the point of thinking the only way this nation will be saved for much of a future is by an act of God. But I don't despair about that, because there are times in the Bible when the people of God were right where we are now, if not worse. And the stories of the people of God in the book of Judges is what I'm thinking about. Israel was in a desperate situation. They spent more time in the book of Judges under foreign domination than they did as a free people. And verse 32 to me is significant because of the six individuals mentioned in verse 32, four of them are from the period of the judges. Gideon, Barak, Samson, Jephthah, all come to us from the book of Judges. And here are four people who by faith did something. that helped the people of God during that time. And it's still possible that by faith, our nation could be saved. That somehow or other we can get past where we are to better days. And so I want to talk about some of the individuals here in verse 32 this morning. I've only got two other lessons in this series from Hebrews 11. We've been in this chapter for months now. And next week I want to present a final lesson from Hebrews 11. And then the following week, Lord willing, present a lesson from the start of Hebrews 12, where we get to the terminus of where Hebrews 11 has been headed. Because when you're talking about someone who acted fully consistent with the will of God and endured, held on because of his focus on God, that person is Jesus Christ. And we'll see the conclusion to Hebrews 11 and Hebrews 12 in a couple of weeks. But I want to begin this morning by talking about giving you an illustration of what it means to do something by faith. Blaise Pascal, famous French writer, French philosopher, posed this scenario one time. He said, imagine you've got a plank 30 feet long. Now, another guy kind of developed what I'm telling you now, but it all came originally from Blaise Pascal. You've got a plank 30 feet long, a foot wide, laid here on the ground. And you're asked to walk from one end to the other on the plank. Everybody here would do it. Everybody. Some of you might do a cartwheel on that plank, getting from one end to the other. Some of you might run across it, skip across. Nobody would have any problem crossing a 30-foot plank laying here on the carpet. But now take that plank and put it atop two crags in the mountains, under which there is a 1,000-foot drop-off to a ravine. And ask everybody to cross the plank with it up there. Same plank, same people. I'm not crossing it. You might, but I'm not. You know why? Because I can imagine what would happen if I fell. And even though I have the ability to cross it, I can prove, put it on the ground, I'll show you I have the ability to cross it. Even though I have the ability to cross it, my imagination of what might happen keeps me from doing so. I'd be scared to cross it. And fear has the ability of completely negating abilities we have. John says in 1 John 4 that fear has torment. Did you know, when you Google it, how many different kinds of phobias are there? I Googled it this morning. It said somewhere between 400 and 500 phobias. There are that many things that people are scared of. That's all the word phobia means, to be scared of something. And fear, John says, has torment. You want to be tortured in life, let your fear get out of control. Give in to fear. You're going to live hell on earth if you're controlled by fear. Now, I tell you what will not get you across the plank. Your intelligence won't get you across the plank. Your intelligence is telling, boy, that's a long drop. That's a long fall. Why chance it? Your willpower will not get you across the plank. To try to will yourself out onto that piece of wood, That probably won't work either. There are two things that will get you across the plank. John gives us one of them. There is no fear in love, John says. perfect love casts out fear. So that plank is up there on top of those mountains. There's a 1,000-foot drop between them. You can't will yourself to cross it. Your reason tells you stay on solid ground. Don't get out there on that thing. But you see your child on the other side, on the other end of the plank, about to be brutalized by some fiend. Your love for that child will get you across the plank. Love casts out fear. Carl Menninger was a famous psychiatrist. He had the Menninger Clinic up in Topeka, Kansas. World famous psychiatrist. This is many, many, 100 years ago now we're talking, back in the probably 1930s. He said that if you feel a depression coming on, if you feel anxiety coming on, and you want to treat it, here's what you do. You go to your front door, you open the door, you walk out, you go across the street, you find somebody to love. You get involved with them, you help them. You get your mind off yourself. Fear concentrates on ourself, our own safety, our own peace, our own everything. Get your mind off yourself, love someone, and that's how you'll deal with the fear in your life. He said, I could empty my psychiatric hospitals if I could get people to love others. Love casts out fear. But there's something else that casts out fear. And that's faith. Faith casts out fear. Every individual mentioned in verse 32, those judges, David, Samuel, face scary situations. They face situations where they were asked to do something. Situations in which most people, their contemporaries, were unwilling to act because they were all scared. And some of these individuals were scared. We'll talk about two of them in just a minute. But they acted by faith. They were asked to cross that plank. Well, that's a big drop, Lord. That's a long fall. Turn the page to Hebrews 13, 5 and 6. Let me tell you what helps you get across the plank when your imagination keeps telling you, boy, that's a long way down. Verse 5 and verse 6 of Hebrews 13. The last part of verse 5. For He Himself has said, I will never leave you nor forsake you, so we may boldly say, the Lord is my helper, I will not fear. What can man do to me? If the Lord says, I want you to cross the plank, and I'm right there with you. I'm holding on to you. If you fall, I won't let you fall. I'm right underneath you. I'll catch you if you fall. That's what the devil quoted to Christ. Hey, jump off. His angels will catch you. Psalm 90. Yeah, that's what Psalm 92 says. Christ didn't jump then, but Christ took a much bigger jump not long after that when He jumped into Calvary. Faith enables us to rise from earth to heaven. It enables us to rise from time to eternity. It tells us the Lord is with us. No matter what is asked of us, He is with us. And He will not let us fall. So with that in mind, let's look at the first of the individuals mentioned here in verse 32, and that's the man Gideon. And there's one big point I'm wanting to make about Gideon this morning, but let me first tell you about Gideon. Gideon was a mighty man. That's how he's addressed. The Midianites, one of those tribes in the area, had invaded Israel. They had taken control of the country for the most part. They were embarked upon a scorched earth policy with Israel. They destroyed all the crops. The Israelites would sneak out in the spring, plant their crops. The Midianites would come back and destroy them. They're trying to starve them out. They drove the Israelites out of their cities, out of their homes. Israelites took to the mountains. They were hitting in caves, hitting anywhere they could find any kind of shelter. And this mighty man, Gideon, he's a mighty man, but he's not a, he doesn't have a death wish because he's hiding too. He's trying to do a little bit of farming without the Midianites finding out about it. And an angel goes to Gideon and says, Gideon, you've been chosen by God to deliver my people from the Midianites. And Gideon says, you've got the wrong guy, Lord. The text says that the Midianites covered the land like locusts can cover a field. Just too many of them. But God says, no, I've got the right man, Gideon. I'm going to use you as my instrument to deliver Israel from the Midianites. And so General Gideon sends out a message and 32,000 men respond. Alexander took on the hordes of Persia with 40,000 men, so that's not that far off. But God says, Gideon, you got too many. And Gideon is saying, what did you just say? The Lord says, you've got too many. You're going to have to cut the army down. So let them all get a drink. I'll watch how they get a drink, and I'll tell you the ones to keep. First, they said, everybody who's afraid, go home. Everyone who's afraid, doesn't want to cross the plank, go home. 22,000 went home, leaving Gideon with 10,000. God says, take the 10,000 down, let them get a drink. And the ones who bring the water to their mouth with their hand, those are the ones we're going to keep. Only 300 out of the 10,000 did that. From 32,000 to 10,000 to 300. The Greeks have their 300, Leonidas and the 300 at Thermopylae. God's got his 300. And none of them have a weapon. God says, tell them to get a torch. And tell them to get a pot to stick the torch in. Surround the Midianite camp. Light the torches. Hide the flame in the pot. And when I give the signal, everybody breaks the pot. And suddenly lights encircle the Midianite camp. And that's what happened. The Midianites thought they'd been surrounded by a much superior force. They take off in the night, killing each other as they're trying to get off, get away. Israel wins a great victory. Now, what got Gideon across the plank was his faith. By faith, Gideon. And what enabled Gideon to come to faith was not his strength. You're a mighty man. But it wasn't his strength Gideon was most noted for. It was his weakness. Humble enough to believe God knew what he was talking about, and that if God says, Gideon, I can use you, he was humble enough to believe God could use him, and he made himself available. It is our weakness that gives us our strength. Paul said, when I am weak, then am I strong. Because when you're weak, the one you're trusting on is God, not yourself. In Genesis 32, Jacob and his family are heading back to Canaan after being gone for 20 years. Jacob is really nervous about it because he knows his brother Esau is waiting for him. The last word he had from Esau was, I'm going to kill you, Jacob, because you cheated me out of my birthright. For 20 years, he's been up there in Syria, glad to be out of the land of Canaan, away from Esau. But now he's headed back to Canaan because God told him to go back and give him that. He had enough faith to pick his family up and head back. But he hears that Esau, with a bunch of men, are coming out to meet him. Over 300 men and Esau are coming out. Jacob's conscience has got the best of him. He's scared. He's nervous. And somehow or other, he ends up by himself beside a dry brook on the east side of the Jordan, Kind of like Scipio, the last night before the big battle, the last night before Jacob expected to meet Esau by himself, and suddenly he is jumped in the middle of the night. Some unknown assailant, he probably thought Esau had sent out an assassin to get him. This guy is suddenly there, and they start wrestling, and they wrestle all night. And the sun's coming up. Jacob has kept it up all night. You think, well, he's going to have a draw. This is going to be a draw, a tie. No, because right when the sun's coming up, the assailant just touched Jacob's hip, just touched it, and threw his hip out of joint. The assailant is letting Jacob know, I've not even begun to fight. The Bible says the assailant attacked Jacob. Jacob wasn't looking for a fight, but the assailant attacked Jacob. And they wrestle all night. And then at daybreak, the assailant throws Jacob's hip out of joint. And you know what Jacob does? He just grabs the guy. And the guy says, let me go. And Jacob says, the only way I'm going to let you go is if you bless me. He's clinging to him. I'll only let you go if you bless me. Now, Hosea, in chapter 12, explains to us what happened. Jacob was one of these guys who lived by his wits, lived by being clever, thought he always could work an angle to make it work to his advantage. He cheated people. Deceived his father, cheated his brother, cheated his father-in-law Laban, his uncle and father-in-law. That's how he lived, by his wits. And now he's in a situation where his wits are not helping him at all. And he says, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. And Hosea says, in doing that, Jacob prevailed with God. Jacob didn't lose. Jacob won. Jacob says, I'm not going to let you go till you bless me. And Hosea says he got the blessing because God broke him. God was the assailant. God went looking for him. God went after him. God got him in the wrestling match and kept at it till Jacob finally said, I give. You win. And when Jacob admitted that, God, the assailant says, tell me your name. What's your name? And Jacob says, my name's Jacob. But he wasn't saying, my name's Jacob. He was saying what the name Jacob means. The name Jacob means a cheater. He was admitting, I'm a cheater. He was confessing his sin. Not trying to live by his sin, confessing it. And when he did that, God said to him, no, you're not Jacob. You're Israel. You're a prince of God. What God is looking for from us is the humility to put our trust in Him and to act by faith. There's a song we sing, nothing in my hands I bring, simply to thy cross I cling. That's what Jacob was doing. Holding on for dear life. And when your faith leads you to Jesus Christ, and you throw your arms around Him and beg for blessing and refuse to let go, that's the kind of faith God wants to see in us. And that's the kind of faith that justifies. Well, let's take just the second guy here in verse 32. And that's the guy, Barak. From going from Gideon to Barak, we go from a man's man, a true general, to a sad sack. Now, many of you don't know who Sad Sack is. I bet Tom does. Beetle Bailey, Sad Sack and Beetle Bailey were cartoon characters. They were both in the army. They were losers. They were goof-offs. They were lazy. They were Gomer Piles. They were blunderers. If Gideon was a George Patton, Barak was a Sad Sack or a Beetle Bailey. Israel has gotten in trouble again. And they have a lady judging the land. The highest civil authority in the land was a lady by the name of Deborah. Isaiah says, listen, if you've got a lady in charge of your country, you've got a country that's in bad shape. Israel was in bad shape. That's not a reflection on Deborah. That's a reflection on Israel. They were in such bad shape that their commanding general was Beetle Bailey. This guy by the name of Barak. The word Barak means lightning. He wasn't a lightning bolt. He wasn't even a lightning bug. He was a mommy's guy. He was a mommy's boy. Deborah summons him. God's ready to deliver Israel. They've been crying out to God. Israel's been crying out to God for help. And God, love can't turn a deaf ear to that. God is now ready to deliver His people. He tells Deborah, I want you to call Barak. And I want you to lead the army against the enemy, the Canaanites. And so Deborah calls Barak. Barak shows up. Deborah says, I want you to take 10,000 men of Zebulun and Naphtali and get up on top of Mount Tabor. Now, I've seen Mount Tabor. And to get up on top of Mount Tabor is to make yourself a sitting duck. You know, Gideon's trying to hide. The Israelites are trying to hide. And now Deborah tells him, go up on Mount Tabor where everybody, including the enemy, can see you. And here's what Barak says. Judges 4, verse 8. Okay, I'll go, but only, Deborah, if you go with me. Can you imagine George Washington or Ulysses S. Grant or Stonewall Jackson saying to a woman, I'll go fight the battle, but only if you go with me? That's the kind of general that Israel had at that time. I'm putting you out on the plank, Barak. The enemy sees you. He's got 900 chariots of armor. You've got a few swords between you. And I'm going to lead you into battle. I want you to charge. And I'll give you the victory. That looks like a pretty long drop if you fall off the plank in a situation like that. But give it to Barak. Even a wimp can find the courage to act by faith in believing in God. Yeah, Barak led the charge. They came down off Mount Tabor, headed to the plain where the 900 chariots were. But God had caused an unexpected rainstorm to cause the river there in the area to overflow, turning the whole plain into mud. All of the chariots of iron got stuck in the mud, and they were easy pickings then for the Israelites. Hebrews 11:6 says, God is a rewarder of those who put their trust in Him. And Lord willing, next week we're going to look at some other ways where this chapter talks about God rewarding people. The chapter ends up talking about the reward that God gives to those who act by faith. So this morning, here's where we're at. Are you out on the plank, or is your fear because you don't love, or lack of faith because you don't believe, keeping you from crossing over to where you need to get? There's somewhere you need to go in your life. And you can get there. You've got the ability, you've got the willpower, you've got the intellect to get it. But your lack of faith, your lack of courage, your lack of love is keeping you from crossing over. You need Hebrews 11. You need to get into the lives of these people in Hebrews 11. Find out they're in bad a shape as you, maybe worse, but by faith, they got to where they needed to go. Thank you for listening.